In the decades before abortion was legalized, many unwed pregnant women were sent away to maternity homes where they could keep their pregnancies hidden from their own communities. Typically, these women were urged to give up their babies for adoption and were expected to then return home as if nothing ever happened. My guest, Anne Fessler, is the author of the new book, The Girls Who Went Away. Fessler is an adoptee. Her birth mother was one of those women who was sent away to a maternity home. Fessler's new book is based on conversations with her birth mother and on interviews with over 100 other women who were between the ages of 15 and 35 when they were pregnant. Your book is about how a lot of unwed pregnant women were sent away from home in the 40s, 50s, and 60s to keep their pregnancies hidden. Remind us of what the climate was like that made a lot of families feel like it was necessary to send the women away.
The climate at that time in post-World War II America was that many families were gaining ground economically. They were socially mobile. They were moving up. And at that time, to have an unmarried pregnant daughter was associated with bad mothering and low social status. So despite the fact that this was really a very frequent occurrence in middle-class families, they could afford to cover it up. They could afford to send their daughter out of town and essentially have her come back and say that she was, you know, visiting a sick aunt or had an opportunity to go to Europe or something to cover the story, and then sort of reintegrate into her her middle-class lifestyle.
And of course, if the girl was in high school and was pregnant, she would be expelled after she started to show,
immediately.
Most likely. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, until 1974, part of the Title IX amendment prevented schools from expelling pregnant young women, both high schools and colleges. And up until that time, many of the schools, immediately upon learning that a young woman was pregnant, they expelled her immediately. She had to leave the school. Her education was interrupted, and the maternity homes did have some educational. If they were large enough, they offered classes to the young women who were in high school, and some of them finished out their education at the maternity home.
So, what were the maternity homes like?
A lot of the young women say it was like being in a going away to camp or being in a large dorm, in the sense that they might have in some cases they shared a room. Most cases they shared a room. In some cases they had large rooms that would have, you know, 12 beds in a room, and they essentially they were confined to that maternity home. Occasionally they would go out in groups. But they basically had activities to occupy the women's time. Younger women very often could not leave the maternity home unless they were with supervision of some kind. Sometimes older women could go out in small groups. So during the day, they usually had a list of chores, and they was like scrubbing the kitchen floors or helping in the kitchen or making beds, and then arts and crafts classes and sewing and various domestic activities to occupy their time. One of the things that seemed somewhat remarkable to me is what was not really done at the maternity homes, in most of them, was to give the women classes in childbirth and to give them some instruction and information about what was to come.
Well, most of the women you interviewed complained to you they were completely unprepared for childbirth.
Absolutely. First of all, at this time, there was so little sex education, so there was no information about sex or pregnancy. And in the maternity home, you have a rather captive audience. They're all going to give birth, yet in most cases, they did not really tell the women anything about what to expect, and they were terrified of giving birth. They had no idea what was to come.
And most of them in the maternity homes went through labor alone. I guess they didn't have family with them.
No, apparently, in most cases, it was the policy to not call the family until after the birth. And So they were very often driven to the hospital and dropped off at the front door by staff at the maternity home. And they went in and admitted themselves pregnant and in labor. And they were instructed to tell people at the front desk that they were from the home. And then they were sort of whisked into a room and prepped for delivery. And they were put in a room. Very often they were left by themselves. There was no one there to be with them or hold their hand or give them any explanation of what was happening to their bodies. And then at some point they were taken into the labor room, and in some cases they were knocked out completely, so they would theoretically have no memory, or so they would have no memory of the birth and theoretically then not suffer the loss. And in other cases, they were awake during the birth of their child, but there was absolutely no handholding with this birth.
Were the maternity homes linked up with adoption agencies so that after the woman staying at the maternity home gave birth, the baby would go to a specific adoption agency?
In some cases, they were. During the pregnancy, certainly there would be caseworkers assigned, and the women would be talking to a social worker, and it was clear, I mean, 80% of the women who went into the maternity homes surrendered their children. So it was somewhat of a foregone conclusion that this was going to be the case. That's how the social workers and adoption workers felt. And so when a woman actually tried to protest and said that, you know, to the people at the maternity home that she was not, did not want to surrender her child. Essentially, she received a kind of barrage of sort of litany of these reasons why, if she loved her child, she had to surrender. And that was that there were better parents waiting, that she was unfit because she was unwed, that she was, you know, a bad girl. And her only option was to surrender.
What kind of communities did the maternity homes tend to be located in? And was there much interaction between the girls and young women who were sent to the homes and the people who lived in that same neighborhood?
Some of the homes were located in, you know, very nice neighborhoods, and some were located in very bad neighborhoods. And so one woman I interviewed in California had gone to a home in Los Angeles, and she had some very some terrible incidences where whenever the young women would go out of the home, neighbors would throw things at them, and, you know, a lot of women reported that people would drive by and yell names at the home, you know, you whores, you know, that sort of thing. And but the woman in Los Angeles said that she had gone to a home that was in a fairly bad neighborhood, and that you know, they were often pelted with, you know, eggs and tomatoes and things like that when they left the home.
Now, this is a very personal story for you because you were adopted, and you eventually tracked down the woman who gave birth to you and found out her story. Her story is not unlike a lot of the stories that you tell in your book. Now, you were told by your mother, the woman who adopted you and brought you up, you were told by her the story of your birth parents. But when you met the mother who gave birth to you, the story turned out to be different than what you were told. So,
yes.
So tell us the story that you grew up with, and then tell us the story as it was told to you by the woman who actually gave birth to you.
Right. Okay. I should also say that was quite common. The agencies very often sort of trumped up the description of the adopting family as part of the process of convincing a young woman that her child would be better off with somebody else besides her. But in the case of, in my case, my family was told that my mother and my father had been dating for a long time, that he was a football player and he was from a family of means, and that his family did not want him to drop out of college and ruin his life, and therefore they were prevented from getting married, which always sounded a little bit like a plot from a movie to me. But anyway, that's the story I was told. And when I met my mother, I discovered that that was not the case, and that she actually had been dating this young man. He was not in college. He was not a college football player. They had been dating, and they broke up, and she met someone else, and the someone else was the man that she was going to marry. And she did not know that she was pregnant when she met the man that she wanted to marry. And so all, the story that I was told was fictitious, or that my parents were told was fictitious.
And did your mother want to give you up for adoption?
I believe yes. She was in a situation where she felt that it's not quite as simple as that, but certainly.
But she didn't feel coerced.
No, she was not one of the women who felt coerced. She was one of the women that did have an option presented to her, and though it may not have really been a viable option for her because her husband-to-be said he would be willing to allow her to essentially bring me home. But that, in small-town America, that would not have been an easy thing to deal with, because certainly as I grew up, it would have been obvious that I was not part of that couple, of that family, should I say. So even though, and he would have been actually blamed in the beginning for getting her pregnant, so to speak, before marriage. So people would have assumed, at least temporarily, that he was the father of her baby, and that's why they got married. As I aged, I think I would have looked nothing like either of them, and it would have been clear that I was someone else's child. And none of those things would have been very easy in small-town America. I was born in 1949, so it would have made their lives incredibly difficult.
Now, you learned that your birth mother actually went to one of the maternity homes, the kind of home that you wrote about in your new book. What home did she go to, and what was her experience like there?
She went to a Florence Crittenden home, and she went away when she was 7.5 months pregnant, I believe, almost 8 months pregnant. And she never told her, she never had a conversation with her mother about this. She told her father that she was pregnant, and he actually came to visit her while she was in the home, which could not have been easy for him to do. He was a farmer, and he needed to be home and taking care of the animals and the farm. And he made a trip to visit her, and but she never told her mother. And she said she thought that probably her father told her mother, but she didn't know. She never said anything to her.
Now, your adoptive mother was adopted herself. But her mother, your grandmother, never told her that she was adopted. She found this out on her own.
That's right. I think in my mother's era, it was adoption. An adopted child was a little bit more of a secret. And I think that was because, she grew up at a time when, part of a woman's role was to produce offspring for their husband. And there was some shame associated with not being able to bear children. And so she tried to ask her mother at one point about her adoption. And her mother essentially told her, don't ever bring that subject up again. And so that was the end of the discussion with her mother, and it was hurtful to her that she could not talk to her mother about it. But she did have confirmation that she was adopted. She found some paperwork that was taped to the back of a painting in her aunt's house, and it clarified that she was adopted. And on that adoption certificate, she had been named Baby Helene. And so when she brought me home from the hospital, she named me Anne Helene.
The woman who adopted you was adopted herself. Do you think, I don't know if she talked to you about this at all, but do you think the fact that she was adopted affected at all how she felt as an adoptive mother?
Because my mother was adopted, my adoptive mother was adopted herself, she was not told by her own mother. She felt it was very important to talk about adoption and not to have adoption be a kind of secretive thing in the family. So she would talk constantly about, you know, waiting for the phone call and how she couldn't wait, you know, to bring my brother and I home. And you know, she always framed it in terms of, you know, going to get us and how, you know, and that process for her. And she acknowledged that I was of some other woman, it might be a way to put it. As a matter of fact, she told me, I don't remember this because I was too young, but she told me that on my first three birthdays, she lit a special candle on my birthday cake for my mother. And so she herself always sort of acknowledged that her joy was built on somebody else's pain. And so she was very empathetic to, you know, this unknown young woman who she said, you know, was not able to take care of me. And so that was very openly acknowledged in my family.
Well, Anne Fessler, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Anne Fessler is the author of The Girls Who Went Away.